Makes me always think like some kind of sports theme is coming in there with that music. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educators talking education. Oh, it is that day again, Johnny Lupinacci, where Jacob, chairman of the board, takes over, puts us in our place, and we get to be guests on our own show. Yeah, we're talking about Jacob Producer's Choice Day. But, you know, I got to say that I'm excited. I'm not anxious. Maybe I've lost that. Hey, yeah. You know,
I think it's your new anxiety cat, Tim. I think there's the Ember, the new Ember. Addition to the Slecker family is bringing Tim reduced anxiety for producer's choice. So this is a win-win all the way around for Jacob.
Yeah. Jacob, see that?
Do you want to take this opportunity to tell the listeners about your new cat?
Well, I guess. I mean,
because people want to know. I think you can't just leave it at that.
I mean, we did not plan on getting a
cat's out of the bag, Tim.
The cat's truly out of the bag. We did not plan on getting a cat. We've had cats. We've had 7 dogs, and we still have another dog. And we had a person, you know, my mother-in-law, who had we've been taking care of for 3 years, move out, and we were like, okay, man, we're back. And they're like, hey, let's go check out and see maybe if we can find a cool place to put the canoe in the water and, you know, enjoy some time away and just being out in the nature and driving along this lake, go down a back road and look at this little, you know, area, just kind of like it said, hey, come check this place out. This would be a good place to put your canoe in.
So, can you canoe here?
Hey, can you canoe here? We got out and, you know, we're like, wow, this is going to be perfect, man, for the canoe.
Perfect.
And, you know, looking at the lake and start hearing this noise. And I'm like, what the heck kind of bird is that? Yeah, no. And son of a gun, look down and underneath, out of the bushes, comes this little black cat and just starts, you know, doing the serpentine around both of my wife's, Michelle's, and my legs. And we walked back to the car, and this little cat followed us. We opened the door. She jumped in, and we said, well, I guess we have a cat now. So brought her home. She's got, you know, black cat, but if you look closely, she's got little hints of orange in her tail and different parts of her fur. So we called her Ember. And yeah, right before the show, she came up and did what cats do when you're on the computer and on some form of a video thing. She came up and decided to say, I'm going to walk around here on your keyboard in front of the camera. So I showed her to you guys. So that's the story. Yeah, maybe she has, you know, reduced my stress level.
I love it. You know, they do say, you know, sometimes it's a companion animal that helps reduce your anxiety, Tim. So you could be onto something here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll let you guys know, though. But I am so truly ready for Jacob, chairman of the board. Jacob, you're in, man. You're on. You're ready to go, I think.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. Thank you for that story, Tim. That was wonderful, and I think the listeners appreciate it very much. But now, for your moment of the producer's choice intro.
For choo-choo producer, Jacob's choice, chairman of the board. Ow!
You now have 2 choices.
Chairman of the board, Jacob.
Ow! Jacob, chairman of the board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices, isn't it?
You chose poorly.
Man, what a good intro that is. I just have to say, whoever made that did a great job. And the cool thing is that it's modular, so that when Johnny has a new cool nickname for me or cool way of saying it, I could just swap that in and out. Or whoever made it can do that. Fellas, Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, thank you so much for being here on your own show. I really appreciate having you here.
Nice. Thank you, Jacob.
Today's topic comes not from me, because I'm not perfect. Sometimes I don't have the right question for the day. This one comes from our listeners. Particularly, the listener is, again, my Grandpa Jim.
Hey,
nice.
We love Grandpa Jim.
Now, he's my grandpa, but he's also a former teacher, and he has a nice mustache. So I think he knows what he's talking about when it comes to topics like these. So that's why I trusted him enough to take his question. Now, this whole story starts in the family group chat, where my cousin sent us a graphic of the highest paid superintendents in Illinois, where me and my cousin come from originally. And next to it, it has the terrible reading proficiency rates next to it. And it's making a point about, oh, they're making all this money and the kids can't read. We've heard it 1,000 times. My grandpa had a question based on that, and I will read it now to you. Dear Jacob, you're my favorite grandson. Come on, Grandpa Jim, you don't have to say that. Might be a good topic for producer's choice. Should superintendents get paid for performance of their students? Base salary plus bonus incentives if students reach / exceed targets? Should teachers receive bonuses too? Personally, I'm not a fan of that idea.
Oh.
I wonder what you guys are going to say, but how do you feel about that topic, Tim and Johnny?
Well, I actually I agree with your grandpa here. I totally disdain the idea. Every time it's come up, it has never been shown to do anything other than create lots of chaos. It's meaningless to try to figure out, quote, how you gauge performance. And typically what ends up happening is that, yeah, we reduce it down to, well, let's measure it and let's give people raises based on test scores. And knowing the history of test scores, you're like, you can't do that. But to me, the biggest example of why you would never want to do this actually comes in the No Child Left Behind era, Atlanta Public Schools, where they were giving out big money bonuses for test score elevations. And anybody, you know, out there from the, remember back at that time, those test scores in Atlanta went up dramatically. And lots of cash was dispersed. And, geez, the leader of that school district, darn it. You know how you get that raise with test scores? Bring those tests in the back of the room after everybody leaves and do a little eraser with your number two pencil eraser. Put in a few right answers here and there. Inflate those test scores. Grab that bonus and get found out and become a headline story and disgraced. And people are like, that's not a reason to not give pay for performance. That was just a person's character trait. And I'm like, no, let's understand what actually happens here. When you put people under extreme pressure, and then also point out the fact that you could have, you know, also, and I'll use the word extreme again, an extreme reward. Nobody should be surprised that this is the type of behavior then that comes out of, quote, pay for performance nonsense. And so, you know, that to me was the epitome of, I can't remember how to say this, Johnny. See if you remember Campbell's Law, that whenever one social metric number is used to produce some kind of social value is that it will always be distorted. And that's where I'm going to do that. And then Johnny, I got to imagine you're probably on my page on this.
Similar page, Tim. I love this question, Jacob. Thank you, Jacob's grandpa, for being a thoughtful listener, for being an educator first and foremost, and then for your great questions. But I agree with Grandpa and Tim. I'm not a big fan of merit pay. I think we just kind of call it that. But, and for similar reasons, right? Like, it introduces some strange factors into motivation, right? And then there's incentive then to focus maybe too much on these tests, or even give too much emphasis on, you know, learning being as maybe unidimensional as testing has lend itself to be. You know, merit pay has never been something I've been a big fan of, even though I probably would have benefited from it in a few different teaching situations. So, however, I do think that the idea of compensating teachers better, or, you know, creating incentive programs for teachers is intriguing. So I'm not like I'm against merit pay as it stands in terms of like, hey, if you get a certain threshold of test scores, you know, maybe you're 90% of your class is at grade level or above, you know, that's extraordinary. And you can get, you know, you have access to more pay. I think that that's not a healthy model. But something has got to be there beyond just accountability, because I'm a big fan of, hey, I just have been getting great reviews, and how is it that, you know, I'm paid modestly in my district compared to people who might not be doing as much or as good of work as I am. I mean, so I think there's some exciting things happening in our unions and districts that have I don't want to say incentivized being a teacher, but, you know, compensated, worked addressed compensation issues for teachers. But to bring it back to superintendents, yeah, man, this has always been a tough one to me. I do think like a holistic kind of evaluation of your district should be like a portion of your pay. Like, it's a political position. I think it's a demanding one. So it's a pretty high paying one. Sometimes some of the highest paid people in our districts are the superintendents, right? I think that the job demands a high salary, but I am not fully opposed to, and I think this has got to be thought through. I haven't actually thought through it, you know, with detail, but, you know, a base salary and then maybe, you know, with option to earn more should you stay longer and be successful. And that's someone coming from a large urban district where, you know, it is constant turnover. So constant turnover. And I flip that around to, you know, working in districts with teachers who maybe are smaller rural districts who have long-term superintendents doing amazing work, right? That could get pulled to go to some of these bigger suburban or urban districts for more money. So I like the idea of like rewarding longevity, success, in some way that maybe makes the salary commensurable to, you know, being pulled away into other districts. So, I mean, I'm against merit pay in general. If it's like, you either got to say you vote for it or against it, but I like the gray area that maybe we could figure something out that makes both teaching and being a leader in our districts, you know, more enticing or more stable or more economically viable. I'm always for teachers making more money, but I hate seeing them fight each other for it.
Yeah.
Right. Or give up good teaching in order to do it. Because I know, you know, like if the goal is pass the test, I don't necessarily have to be a great teacher to get most of my students to pass the test. I also could be doing great teaching and maybe on any given year not have a majority of my students passing a test. There are too many factors there.
Yeah, there are too many factors there. And yeah. And Jacob, you know, your grandfather's question to me was really related to test scores and pay. Does the justification for pay and potentially low test scores, you know, and it moved us into this conversation about, you know, paying for test scores. And, you know, we just had one of our great guests, return guests, Chris Tankin, who was on. And he has been doing the research on test scores and what are the contributing factors to test scores. And this is why test scores should never be used to dole out any type of bonusing money rewards to teachers, because, and when people hear me say this, they get a little bit uptight, but teachers don't have any control over test scores largely because, as Dr. Tankin can do, give him like four different socioeconomic statistics and he will predict your school's test scores, you know, within a very slight margin of error before the kids take the test. And he has done that and replicated that so many times, which is the simplicity of saying, you know what? The socioeconomic conditions typically are reflected most in that quantitative score. And just for anybody, I was trying to point out Campbell's Law, and that is the more any quantitative social indicator is used for social decision-making, the more subject it will be to corruption pressures and the more apt it will be to distort and corrupt the social processes it is intended to monitor. So in other words, in Atlanta, cheating, of course there was. You know, of course there was. So, Jacob, I don't know if there's more there, but, you know, should teachers and leaders be paid more for doing incredibly awesome work? Yes. I think right now, though, that really wasn't the question your grandfather was asking.
Yeah. Well, part of the question and part of the reason that I felt like I knew where you guys would be going with it was sort of talking about paying more based on the success of students. And breaking that down, how would we do that? I just immediately thought if they did something like this, it would go to test scores. That would be the metric that would be used. Johnny was talking about how he does like the idea of rewarding good performance. I want to ask you guys, if you how else would you do it? What is the good way to measure performance?
Yeah, I think team-based goals. I think like school and district-wide goals. So I love this question, like this thought experiment your grandpa, you know, sparked here on Busted Pencils, because I think it's exciting when you start to think about, well, if our superintendent has incentive here, like we start to think, we tease a little bit of merit pay, like the district's doing well, you know, you can make up to this much more. And if the district does well, well, must mean the teachers have been doing something extra special. So I like some team-based goals. Maybe like school-wide incentives. So it's like if our school, you know, hits these markers over the course of the school year, you know, retains students and does really great job with like, you know, disciplinary, you know, rates, you know, like low levels of suspensions and, you know, goes through a great review process and, you know, maintains that, like, hey, the whole school is in line for some kind of merit bonus. I love these ideas. I think that's a possible way to do it based on team and merits. You know, a while back, and I was, you know, part of some teachers working on with their local union around how you increase your individual salary. And historically that's been, you know, degrees. You get, you know, classroom hours and, you know, so many years of experience and advanced degrees or continuing education credits or units. And I think some innovative things are happening around our country and districts around this as well. It's no longer just go get a degree, but there is a lot of like local set objectives in terms of, you know, achieving like a lead teacher role, you know, being evaluated and moving along a particular rubric advances your opportunity for more pay. It's not simply collecting credit hours or academic achievements, right? It's actual like working together in a team, being part of an initiative. There's all kinds of ways that you're evaluated in many districts to advance your career. And I think these are exciting ways, like percentage of it, like lead teachers in your school can increase like the amount maybe a principal has to, you know, pay their teachers. I think there's some real exciting ways. Like I come back to it again, Jacob, like I did in the first round of the questions is, to me, it's about retaining really great teachers. My entire career, you'd lose a great teacher to a school that could cherry pick them because it might have been, you know, either closer to where they lived or it's like a school that is a little less financially stretched. They could make more in a better district. And, you know, I always thought, how can we keep teachers, great teachers, where they are, not holding them down, right? Mm-hmm. Or not putting it on them to be like, oh man, really? You're leaving us, right? It should never be on someone's like conscience that they had to leave, you know, a place they were doing really good because the money would be better somewhere else. That always irked me. I know I sound more like a socialist now than ever, but I really always thought like if we could figure out a way to pay our teachers better, right? And it was really clear their advancement in career and their growth within our entire system, then we'd lose a lot less teachers, right? Mm-hmm. We'd lose a lot. And that's same true. Like I knew many of teachers who thought, I don't know how long I can stay teaching in the classroom. I got to go to administration because I need to make some more money here. Like this isn't enough for the family here. And that's sad, but true. And not that they didn't become great principals, but you know, I always thought like, what if we are paying our teachers
well
enough for them to stay teaching? So I love the idea of creatively exploring team goals, school goals, district goals, retention policies that help incentivize, you know, a merit pay system that works for everybody.
So Tim, would you agree with that? Well, I mean, what do you see in the realm of, as Comrade Lupinacci said, collectivizing these goals into that merit-based system? I mean, what do you think?
I agree with Johnny on that one. We lose way too many teachers. I mean, first of all, just from the shallow pay to begin with, but then the idea of our greatest teachers, you know, what are the incentives for them to stay in the classroom? You know, at one point, Johnny said, you know, hey, you know, I got to go into administration to make some money. And I will tell you that, yeah, some of them became great principals. However, a lot of them didn't, and in fact, couldn't make the transition from great teacher to great principal. And so I would like to see the ability for teachers to stay put for that reason, too, is because there's something about leadership that you really want leaders to emerge into those positions and not be, you know, enticed only by the money. If there is a quantitative indicator that we might want to look at potentially now, as we've been talking about this, I would like to maybe start to reward teachers on their students' level of engagement. As we've been talking more and more about that, we know the sad statistic that after first grade, for every year a kid spends in school, their level of engagement decreases. And, you know, we talked to Mike Bigley this week, and talking about what they're doing up in their school is that, you know, they're really trying to turn around the whole structure of schooling, which we've pointed out, the structure of schooling really does contribute to low engagement and teachers knowing that they have to do certain things, even when we know that they're not the best for kids, you know. So engagement scores, and again, we'd have to make sure they're valid, reliable, and all the things you do to make quantitative measures work. But that would be way more interesting to look at engagement levels versus test scores across numeracy and literacy scores, considering that, you know, if we can really be incentivizing teachers and leaders and superintendents to create engaging classrooms, engaging schools, engaging school districts, it might be interesting to look at there as a way to dole out a little extra cash.
I don't want to dwell on this part of the conversation for the entire duration of the show, but just to make sure that we're clear on what we're saying and our stance on these things, because there's sort of two separate parts of this. There's the teacher side and the superintendent side. What I'm getting from this is that neither of you think that individual teachers should be either docked or rewarded monetarily based on student performance on the individual level. Maybe some group-based team goals could bear fruit down the line. But Johnny, I believe you said you're sort of in favor of the superintendents having these sort of goals and incentives because it's more of a political position. Tim, did you have a specific view on the superintendent side of that issue?
Test scores, here's the other problem, you know, truly scientifically researched, scientific consensus, all those things. Pegging test scores to some individual factor, such as saying teacher X contributed to test score gains. First of all, the research on that has been horrendous. And even some of the best psychometricians, in other words, people who like to measure things, have pointed out time and time again that it's an unreliable statistic to say that, you know, teacher X caused 0.25 points of reading score gains, because when they start looking at the other contributing factors, the other contributing factors muddy the water so much that actually having any what we call reliability, that the number we assign to a teacher. And so then for every person removed from the teacher, the reliability then of that test score diminishes. So to the point where you get to saying the superintendent caused test score gains or contributed to test score losses, there's no real science to put any type of stock in that. I know, Johnny, I don't know if you're agreeing disagreeing.
I agree with you on the level of, like, are we asking about measurement of learning for students? And
yeah,
and I think it's a, you know, test score only is a poor measurement. But I think related to what Jacob brings up here is why it might be shocking is I'm kind of a fan of it, and I know it exists in bargaining and contracts for superintendents, is, you know, like a bonus. Like, you know, like if the district is doing really well on a number of performance factors, and I think those need to be really thoughtful, they might include test scores, but they also include things like, you know, like great attendance rates, great retention and graduation rates, you know, for students, you know, increased participation in skilled trades, all kinds of ways our large districts, you know, have, you know, factors that can contribute, to, you know, what I would say is a measurement of success from a leader, right? Which it would be requiring that they're, you know, supporting schools, that teachers feel really well paid and supported in there. And I know this is an unprecedented, large urban superintendents have this as a clause in many of their contracts. Like, you know, you can earn up to another $30,000 per year, or an extra $20,000, or 12% of your salary, of your base salary, can be earned should the district meet, you know, certain criteria, certain performance bonuses that are tied to metrics like academic gains, management efficiencies, and even innovative reform. I'm this where the socialist in me starts to sound a little more capitalist. I'm a big fan of, and probably because I saw so much turnover, right? You're here to do some big things. You better do them, right? Because you have a short window to do them in. And you got to incentivize, I think, short windows. If you're signing somebody to do what they say they're going to do in a couple of years, then I think very differently than I think about teachers. I think for superintendents, then put your action right away behind it. Don't tell me it's going to take years to initiate these things. I'm going to start to tie money to that. And if you want full pay, you're going to do those things pretty quickly and get moving on them. But I think being a superintendent is a very different job than being a principal or being a, you know, a classroom teacher. And so I'm a little more capitalist minded when it comes to incentivizing their getting it done.
But you're talking, you know, and this is where, yeah, I agree with Johnny too. I was really doing that narrow metric of, you know, somebody reading the paper, seeing a salary, and then seeing, quote, reading scores, and making a decision there that that salary is justified or not justified based on those. But, you know, the vast dimensions of leadership, I mean, there, you say, you know, multiple different ways, as Johnny was pointing out, test scores potentially being, you know, one. You know, and as I said, engagement, which would be then, I think, you know, anything to bring up engagement would be some form of structural leadership that actually breaks down some of the issues that keep kids from being engaged. So if you're talking about, you know, a mixed bag of what we, you know, might say multiple measures, for somebody in such a high leadership, yeah, incentivizing them to, you know, meet those goals to do great things. That's different. And to me, I don't know that that's capitalistic, socialistic, or anything, or if that's just kind of saying, we got a job to do. We want you to do great work. Here are the things that we're very interested in. If we give you this job and you do the things that you say that you're interested in doing, the things we're interested in, if we make this work in a nice harmony where everybody's happy, then we're going to compensate you well so that we keep you.
Yeah, longevity pay too. Put that in there as part of the performance you know, bonuses. I'm a big fan. Let's give everybody bonuses. Like Oprah here. You get a bonus. You get a bonus. Yeah. Jacob gets a bonus for more producer choices.
Whoa. Nice. I can get behind part of that last idea with the Jacob bonus thing. Sounds pretty cool. To put a bow on this, I think what we're saying is that we like the idea that when people do a good job, they should get rewarded for it, and that we should have standards for how good people do, but that idea lives and dies based on the validity of the metrics you try to use to measure these things. Does that sound, we can all agree on that?
Yeah.
Man, you interviewed us for 30 minutes for you to make that crystal clear point.
I wrote that down before the thing. I actually had what, this was all, I've been guiding you through these questions to get to my point, which was there. But unfortunately, there's only time for one last special type of question. Let's go! Administrators, superintendents, these cold suits. Just kidding. They're great people. Guys, Johnny, tell me about a really good administrator you'd like to talk about that you've worked with in 60 seconds.
Oh, man, I love so many. This is a quick one. You know, a local guy that I've worked with for a while, you know, Matt Ordorf. He's a great principal. You know, he turned a really rough school around in a matter of a few years. And he did it by being like a big gentle giant, being firm and empathetic, but supporting the heck out of his teachers. And you know, really taking a rough school, a school that was struggling and had an identity of being a tough place to be a kid and a worse place to be a teacher. And in a few years, really turned it around. And I believe that another big inspiring one is one who inspired me to actually be a teacher, a principal, Deborah Myers, who wrote the book Power of Their Ideas. And I really believe this, a great principal can make a school an amazing place in a really short period of time. So all you principals out there doing that work, keep it up, because you truly are leaders who make a difference.
Same question goes to you, Tim. Tell us about, in 60 seconds, I'm watching that clock.
Tell us
about a great administrator you've worked with.
Probably, like Johnny said, I've had some great leaders I've worked with, but one who just stands out to me, Ed Cohen, has moved on now, but great guy. Met him actually while I was in college learning to become a teacher, a summer job fair. He was in our college union standing there recruiting to work at his summer camp outside of Baltimore, Camp Airy, where he ran, he was the camp director, but was also a Baltimore City principal during the time that he wasn't running the camp. And Ed had a magic about him with being with people, communicating effectively, and being incredibly stern and harsh if you got on the wrong side of him, to the point where I was like, man, how does he balance such awesomeness and such, what do you want to say, just like, you're like, man, oh crap. If you saw Ed coming in with that look, it was like one of those things where it's like, oh man, we're done. But if you saw him coming in that, in the other way, with that, you know, just a happy look coming to see and talk to you, you were just like, man, this guy is amazing. And so the way I saw him working with camp counselors, people from international over the sites, ages from, again, you know, parents, kids, everything, truly a great leader.
Tim, I'm going to be honest with you. That was slightly over a minute, but he sounds so awesome. I let you go.
Thank you.
I thought that needed to be finished. So,
well, Tim, and now you know. Yeah.
Now I know about it. Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, thank you so much for coming here on your own show to be interviewed. It's an honor to have you. And I know you may have seen Saturday Night Live before. They've got, you know, oh, these hosts have been here this many times. You know, it's a big club for the, like, Steve Martin and stuff. You guys, this is huge. This is your 20th appearance on the Producer's Choice Show for both of you.
Hey, 20 big ones, huh?
Wow.
So congratulations on that. We've had a great run so far, guys. And Tim, it's time for something. And I want to remind you, it's not time to reread on accident Campbell's Law. It's time for the other thing in the chat.
Well, Jacob, it's time for your moment of zen. While some people think that dissent is unpatriotic, I would argue that dissent is the highest form of patriotism.
Well, thank you, listeners, for dissenting and listening to Busted Pencils, this special episode of Producer's Choice. And remember, you can grab great podcasts packed with all kinds of Busted Pencils content on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, on the Civic Media website, or you can always find us at bustedpencils.com. Hey, and don't be late for homeroom on Monday, and be sure to grab next week's class in session on Wednesday. And if you don't know, well, you're going to love this because you can catch Busted Pencils broadcast at 3 p.m. Central Time across every Civic Media Network station for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.